Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Azaleas are in bloom.
I was able to hit high bomb draws with my driver.
A-man corner is groomed and ready.
I was able to hit squeezer hot cuts.
Hello, friends.
So what we dream about is to have mind body come together.
This is a Masters Week edition of AJ and Dusty.
Brought to you by Langdon Farms Golf Club, the best course in the Northwest for year-round golf. Book your tee time at langdonfarms.com.
AJ and Dusty on 1080 The Fan.
Myra, now number two, coming up this hour, we've got Andrew Nemec, recruiting show with Andrew Nemec, Thursday nights, Raher on the Fan. He's got big news. He called me and goes, hey, bruh, got some news.
Middle of the night.
Yep.
Woke you up out of your bed. Hello?
No, he called me as we were prepping for the show, said, good news on the Beavs front. And he dropped the Melvin Jordan news on me. And I was like, ooh. And he goes, we may not be done. Bum, bum, bum. All right. Well, he told us during the Pac-12 tournament. What's that?
Oh, there was an interview next to the suspense.
Cool.
It happens.
It happens sometimes, yeah. So Nemec will join us coming up next to tell us what's going on in Beaverland, as this is the highest recruit Jonathan Smith's ever got. All right, well, he told us.
Oh, darn it.
For the love of everything that's holy, Will.
I started to delete it.
Yeah. You obviously did a great job. I know. Buttons are, it's hard in there. I get it.
There's a lot of buttons in here.
All right. Well, let's talk a little Masters, shall we? Hey, I love this. The course is coming back. The course is coming back. They're letting the golfers score a little bit today. Yesterday, I was talking about this as Big Sook was taking his shirt off, but you had golfers talking about like brown spots on the greens where it was so baked out. Like everything about Augusta on TV is the most beautiful and pristine course you will ever see. And you can't play on it for almost half the year. Because even the members. Because of they take such good care of it, a commitment to making sure it is in tip-top shape for this tournament. They have actively tried to make the course harder. And boy, yesterday you had guys saying they would put shots right where they wanted to, or so they thought, because if you missed by a couple of feet, you would go from a soft spot to a brown patch and boom, your ball was gone. Saw guys, you know, hit a brown spot. And usually they just get it to roll back up and nestle next to the cup. And it was rolling all the way off the green and into the water, like 25 yards.
Oh, crap.
Well, you're the wrong person to be talking about this, because it was some of the beauty of Augusta was kind of gone. Well, today scores are going back lower, and I'm here for it. Justin Rose shot a 7-under yesterday, and his 65 had him comfortably in the lead after round one. Today, he comes back down to earth. He shoots even, but everybody else going low. Tony Finau in the leaderboard yesterday, people were criticizing, like, oh, we just don't have the sexy names up there. How about this? Jordan Spieth shot a 4-under 68 today. He is tied for second with Mark Leishman. Tony Finau goes 6-under 66 today. He's now 4-under par and just 3 off the shot, off the lead. Justin Thomas has a 5-under 67 today. He's 3 off the pace of Justin Rose. We're starting to get some of the names that people recognize heading into the weekend, and this is what makes the Masters great. Like, everybody is coming back down to earth at the top, and the big boys are starting to crawl their way back up because the course playing a little bit more true to what those guys feel, you know, Augusta National does play, or they've adjusted to it properly here in day number two. I love it. And tomorrow they're expecting some like thunderstorms to roll through, so it'll soften up a little bit more. This is going to be a great finish. It was a rough start. They knew it was going to be like that. Here we go. I love it. I'm all in on Masters. Did that do anything for you, Will Darkins?
Oh, no.
Okay.
Where did your love of golf come from?
The struggle of it. Honestly.
As a kid?
My dad doesn't play golf. I just kind of got in. Like, I started playing with my brother-in-law when he worked at a golf course. When
was that?
When he was in college and I was like in middle school and high school. And then I played a little bit in college, and then just like after, it's really over the last handful of years, I've really gotten like tried to play golf more and get better. And this year, probably I think this year I'm a lot like everybody else, like casual golfers. 2020 pandemic was a terrible year for a lot of people and a lot of things. The golf industry, it got a lot of people back out on the golf course, and I golfed a heck of a lot more this past year than I have in the past. And like, I used to be god awful, and I've gotten better. I'm still awful, but I've gotten better. And it is part of that struggle, and just kind of like, there's like no one thing you can do to just fix it. And I like that. I need that. You know what? After you're done competing in sports, like, you lose those incremental things that you could do to make yourself better and kind of get your performance up. Like, there's no reason for me to do CrossFit. I'm just get me hurt, right?
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Maybe you do need CrossFit and you just don't know it yet.
But what am I getting my body ready for? Like, putting my body through that for what?
To kick some ass. Yeah. That's what.
Because you never know. Like,
dude, you don't have to tell me about CrossFit. What you're describing right here is exactly the response I give people when they look at me and I tell them I used to play college football, and they go, "What happened to you?"
I get that all the time.
Yeah, I'm like, I lost weight because, right. I didn't want to be 240 pounds walking around not needing to do anything with it. If I'm working construction or I'm doing something like in home building or contracting, I get it.
But I do this. But the people that, like, then that's just a personal thing for me. Like, people that like, they need that outlet of working out hard like that.
Yeah.
And I totally get that. I get that aspect of it. It's just, that's not for me. I need something that, like, I don't know. Golf is the ultimate knock you down a peg, right?
I like that.
You get these little successes, and then you're like, okay, I can do this. It keeps you coming back.
So you're trying to say that no matter how much physical work you do on your body, however much stuff you do in the gym, reps, sprints, whatever, it won't really amount to much on the golf course because it's a different type of skill set. Mm-hmm. Is that what you're getting at?
Yeah, kind of. Yeah. Yeah. And I like drinking with my friends.
Yeah, there
so
you go.
So there's that too. And how many things can you do both at the same time? Challenge yourself and drink with your friends.
Well, that's why there's beer pong.
See?
Dude, hell yeah.
Hell yeah, bro.
Hell yeah, right there.
Yeah, bro.
Okay, elbow over the line.
All right.
I get the cup.
I got a note for you. 82% of this comes via Justin Ray. He says 82% of Masters champions the last 50 years were at or within four of the lead through 36 holes. So that's a number to keep an eye on. And Bryson DeChambeau, I'm sorry to tell you, six off the lead. That makes me happy.
His big ass ain't up there, huh?
Nope. All right, Beavers get some of the best news that they've had on the recruiting trail in quite some time. Andrew Nemec of the Recruiting Show with Andrew Nemec and Oregon Live joins us to break down the Melvin Jordan commitment next. What does this mean for Oregon State, and are they done? AJ and Dusty, no AJ McCord. She's got a day off on 1080 The Fan and the Odyssey app. All right, it is 1:20. AJ and Dusty, no AJ McCord. She out today. She'll be back on Monday. This man called me this afternoon, or I guess it was before noon, prepping for the show. And he says, "Hey, I got some news for you on the Beavs front. They got good news recruiting." I said, "Let's do this." So joining us now is Recruiting Show with Andrew Nemec's very own Andrew Nemec. I heard you talking about this, how there'd be a couple of names this week that could be coming up big for the orange and black. And you gave me a buzz this morning. Tell me a little bit about Melvin Jordan, the newest commit to Jonathan Smith and the Oregon State Beavers, a linebacker out of Florida.
Well, first of all, I got to give a shout to the Oregon State graphics team getting his commitment edit done, and Jordan Schultz from ESPN from hosting the interview. How embarrassing would it have been if you'd have had me on the show and he delayed his commitment? And I'm like, yeah, there's going to be great news, Dusty, but we'll talk about it in a few hours. We'll talk about it next week. That would have been awful.
Dude, that would be a hell of a tease.
It would have been terrible.
Melvin Jordan is a big-time talent. He's an inside linebacker. Oregon State loves him at inside linebacker. They see him in the mold of Avery Roberts. He's a little bit undersized at 6'2", 205. He had offers from Florida, Florida State, and Miami. He's a Florida kid. Anytime you get the big three in Florida, that's a really good sign. They liked him at outside or potentially even a box safety. But Oregon State said, hey, look at the success we've had with our inside linebackers. They're versatile. They go sideline to sideline. Occasionally we send them off the edge, but they also pick up that running back in the flat and coverage. This is a kid who in 7-on-7 has played corner, and he's a middle linebacker. So you're talking about, in terms of, I'm not saying he's this type of talent, but in terms of his skill set, a lot like Fred Warner from the 49ers. He's not that Bobby Wagner thumper, even though Bobby Wagner's great in coverage as well. He's not a huge hitter. But he's very, very versatile. And in the Pac-12 that is so passing-oriented, a middle linebacker who can drop back into coverage and cover like a high school corner and then also cover running backs in the flat and be a sure tackler is a really valuable piece. And what this boiled down to is Oregon State all along, no matter what, he committed to initially Willie Taggart at Florida State when he was young, really young, too young, probably a sophomore in high school. And then he committed to Cincinnati. The defensive coordinator left for Notre Dame, so he opened things back up because that was his primary recruiter. And all along throughout that whole process, Oregon State stayed on him and said, we want you an inside backer. You're our guy. No one else matched Oregon State's passion for him, and no one else matched Oregon State's desire to play him at inside linebacker. He's perfect for Oregon State's scheme. He's the highest-rated high school recruit in the Jonathan Smith era. And again, if you're a defensive coordinator, you're kind of salivating over this kid. This is a kid who could end up, you could use him at safety at times, you could use him at outside backer at times, you could use him at inside backer at times, and he potentially could develop into a versatile piece that really gives people fits. I comped him to Derwin James, is what he kind of plays like. I know some of the people locally, in terms of locally in Florida, they see him, again, more as a Fred Warner type.
Okay, now he picks Oregon State over the likes of Arkansas and, as you mentioned, Florida State and Cincinnati, two places he was previously committed to. What is it about the Beavs that stuck out to this young man?
Again, playing inside linebacker.
That's it.
For him. He sees himself as a really versatile inside linebacker, and he's transferred schools. He's been committed to two other schools. He's watched Willie Taggart get fired. Seen his defensive coordinator tell him he was locked into Cincinnati and then leave for Notre Dame. So he's gotten mixed messages throughout his recruitment. The only school that all the way through said, you're this guy.
That's it.
This is our staff, and you fit here, has been Oregon State. He said he'd do Zoom calls and guys would be in and out for various programs, but Oregon State always brought 3, 4, 5 coaches to his Zoom meetings, and that made an impression on him. And again, one of the big pieces is, look at what Oregon State's done of late with even their young inside linebackers.
Yeah.
The top two tacklers in the Pac-12 last year, Avery Roberts and Omar Spates, inside backers at Oregon State. So he sees himself in that role. And truthfully, this is one you do have to watch. He's been committed to 3 different places.
Yeah.
He's transferred high schools. This is a kid that's going to be hard to keep all the way through because it's a cross-country commitment and he is so highly sought after. If Oregon State can keep him in the fold, he's a big-time, big-time teacher.
Now, something that you've always talked about is that, you know, Oregon will throw, you know, a multitude of coaches at recruiting a guy, right? It's not just like, oh, you have this region, you have this region, you have this region. Something that stuck out to me is that you said, you know, he'll do Zoom call and they had 3 to 5 guys consistently on there with him. Is that becoming more of a commonplace in recruiting in the Pac-12 now? Is that in specifically at Oregon State that they're going with the group effort to land these kids these days?
Yeah, you have to. There's just so much movement in coaching, and like it or not, and I know you get kind of the get off my lawn guys say, you don't need five coaches texting you every day. That's what kids want a lot of the time. And, and you can say, we don't like doing that. We don't want to bother the kid. You're not. If you're only checking in once a week, you look like a school that doesn't care. Not a school that's confident in their pitch and only feels like they need to deliver it once in a while. You need to stay on these kids. And Oregon State, honestly, is a little behind the curve in the rest of the Pac-12 in terms of doing that. Other programs have picked up on that and done it for a while. This feels like the first recruiting cycle where it seems like every recruit I talk to for Oregon State says, like, these three, these four, these five coaches are recruiting me. Last year, that was mixed bag. Sometimes it was one. Most of the time, it was two or three. Very rarely was it four or five. And that seems to be their approach now. And good for them. I mean, as long as you're getting there, that's great. And sure enough, we're seeing the results. The first three recruiting cycles for Coach Smith did not land a top 500 high school football prospect. In last year, he got two. Both were recruited by Michael Petrie, Demir Collins, and Easton Mascarenhas. Michael Petrie moves on, and you go, uh-oh, that was their big recruiter. I mean, he could get him at running back. He could get him at linebacker. And their first commit in 2022, high school kid, is the highest rated commit they've ever gotten out of high school in the Smith era. So they're doing some things right. We're seeing the results. It, you know, as much as people want to make recruiting rocket science, it's really not. Mass recruit your kids, have multiple coaches involved, have a lot of energy, send them some cool edits, host a cool official visit, have some nice facilities, and build relationships. And sure enough, it works. And anytime a coaching staff kind of fights against it, they find themselves on the losing end. Look at Helfrich. You know, they could host a nice visit, but they wouldn't send edits. They weren't into that. We're not going to do that. We're not going to hit up kids with multiple coaches. We're not that program. We're not that needy. And look at the results. There's a tried and true formula. Oregon State's following it, and the results are following.
Okay, so this is number one. What does the near future hold for Oregon State? Are there other kids that they're making this headway with on the trail?
Yes, there was some buzz that they would get a second commitment sometime in the next few days. I don't believe it will be today. I don't believe it will be tomorrow. Sometime in the next few days. That was the buzz. Since then, I've confirmed it. So there is a kid in waiting for a commitment in the next 3 or 4 days. He's not entirely sure when he's going to decide, but that is coming certainly within the next week. So another commitment in the class of 2022 coming for Oregon State very soon.
And what about the Ducks? Is any good news coming on the Ducks side?
Yeah, you know, I've talked about it on the show that Texas is becoming the new kind of frontier for Oregon, and sure enough, we're seeing more evidence of that. The number one outside linebacker in the nation, Harold Perkins, he's an Under Armour All-American. He has set an official visit for the game that shall not be named, Oregon versus Oregon State in November. He will be in attendance at that game taking an official visit. We keep seeing this. It's the theme of 2022. I will continue to talk about it. Oregon is trying to make a push into Texas. They've got two commitments already, and they're hosting some of the big, big names out of Texas on official visits. There will be more coming before signing day in December.
What do you know about Percy Lewis? Because I'm looking do you know anything about this young man? Because I looked at him, and I clicked on like the commits thing, the 6'7", 350-pound offensive tackle out of Gulf Coast Community College. There's not really much about this guy. It says he's just like a mountain of a man, and he's committed to Oregon.
He's humongous. PB's humongous. That's what I know. He looks raw, but he's huge. And Oregon has done a phenomenal job with these junior college offensive linemen, not only recruiting them, but developing them. Look at George Moore. Look at Malaisala Amuvelaulu. Look at TJ Bass. Those guys were all the number one offensive tackle or offensive guard in their class in the junior college ranks, and they've all done fairly well, at the very least gotten significant playing time, if not been starters. This is the latest one. It's very, very, very early in 24/7 Sports ranking of junior college kids, and he's the number one junior college recruit in the nation right now.
Wow.
That said, I believe last I saw they'd only done evaluations on two kids.
Oh.
So you could look at it and say, well, he's the best of two. But the other way to look at it is they evaluate guys when they become needs. When somebody says, hey, we need to evaluate this guy, he's a guy. And a lot of times the best guys get evaluated soonest because everybody knows they're a commodity. So is he one of just two? Is he the best of two? Or is he the first JC guy nationally that people said, hey, we've got to get an eval on him? And I think it's kind of in between, frankly. But he is a very good prospect. Potential, I think he's probably too slow-footed to stay, definitely not left tackle. I think he could be a right tackle, or he could slide inside and just be this monster of a guard. And good luck getting around him to get to the quarterback, whoever the heck that is, right? That's the million-dollar question right now, Eugene.
Man, look, I just threw that name out there, and I felt bad because I sprung it on you, but you were locked, loaded, and ready to go. So, of course you were. Well, how about this one then? Who are the Niners going to take?
Don't even get me started.
Did
you listen to the show last night?
Yes, I did.
Literally,
why do you think I asked you that, man?
I've created a Madden franchise and won an MVP with Fields. I woke up last night. It's the sixth or seventh night since they traded for the third pick, and read about who they might take and read scouting reports. And I know the offensive line ranking, PFF rankings for all five of the quarterbacks that are supposed to be first rounders. I know who's best against the blitz. I know who's the highest graded in throwing into tight windows. I'm kind of the belief that none of the quarterbacks in this class are truly as good as everyone says. I'm not a firm believer that Trevor Lawrence is an absolute can't miss. I think he has a very high floor, but I don't think he's going to be an all-time quarterback. Although, again, I think he's good and deserves to be the number one pick. I have questions about all of them. But I like Justin Fields the best, and I'm struggling emotionally. If you've got any advice, if anybody knows a good sleeping pill, certainly our NyQuil is running low. Mm. I need something to sleep through the night because it's keeping me up at night, man. It's a problem.
Nemec, I tweeted you about that, and then I was like, are you okay? And I was like, I'm concerned about you. And you tweeted back to me, you were like, no, you're not. You're just making fun of me. And I was like, whoa, calm down.
I have to say, Will did not set me up for that. This is the honest truth. I just listened to the beginning of the recruiting show. Actually, I listened to a bulk of the recruiting show yesterday. And I got a kick out of your, I'm sorry, I'm enjoying your misery of what you're going through right now.
Yeah, dude, I think Zach Wilson's the future for you guys. Seriously, though.
Don't do this to him.
Start with me. His arm strength is terrible, and he's the worst rated against the blitz. We can't have this.
I don't know, man.
He was terrible against protection. There's a play on like fourth and one against Coastal Carolina.
I don't know. That was a good game.
First down. They needed a first down. They had a running back wide open in the flat. Instead, he tries to throw kind of a Hail Mary deep ball. Incomplete. Hey. That's a situation where you have to read the room, know the situation, get the first down. He doesn't do it.
No, he's a gunslinger. He's a gunslinger.
That gunslinger mentality.
I'm so sorry, Andrew.
It's a real problem.
I'm so sorry that, like.
Is there a help group?
Yeah, probably, man. Reddit. That'll do it.
Yeah, get on Reddit.
Yeah, get on Reddit. That'll make you sleep at night.
One last thing. Uh-huh. How about this for Oregon State's progress? We got to switch it because otherwise I'm going to start freaking out.
All right.
Colson Loveland's a four-star tight end out of Idaho. Uh-huh. He visited Oregon State somewhat secretly last weekend. We had him on the show to talk about it. He scheduled an official visit in June. It's between, and not officially, but in terms of the schools that he's interested in, it's a bunch of Pac-12 schools, but really one of the schools that's a standout for him is an offer from Alabama. You've got a four-star tight end right now going, Oregon State or Alabama. And if I gun to my head right now, I think he'd choose Oregon State over Alabama. They're doing a much better job in recruiting, and they deserve a lot of credit for that. I don't think they get enough credit when they start to fix things. We don't give them enough credit to say they're starting to fix things. I saw signs of it in the last recruiting cycle. When you're going toe-to-toe with Alabama for a kid from Idaho and you've got a real shot and you might be the leader, you're doing something right. So let's give the Beavs some credit here.
I love it. Andrew Nemec. You can hear him on the recruiting show with Andrew Nemec Thursday nights, 7 to 8 p.m. And catch his work at OregonLive.com. Appreciate you, buddy.
Justin Fields for life.
Dude, the struggle's real. The struggle is real for Andrew Nemec. But how about that? Great news for the Beavs. Melvin Jordan, they get a commitment from him today. Inside linebacker, highest rated prospect in Jonathan Smith's tenure as head coach. They're expecting another one in coming days. And how about that? A top recruit at the tight end position who's not in state could be picking the Beavs over Alabama. Wow. Jonathan Smith, tip your hat to him. All right, Tom Brady and Luka Garza are in on the game. The future's here, and it came pretty dang quick. Here's Will with SportsCenter. We've got quite the story here. According to Fox Sports, Petros Papadakis, and Scott Wolf of Inside USC, the Trojans going through spring ball down in LA. Apparently, a homeless man has recently spent several days inside the USC football facilities, according to their security. And this has included sharing a jacuzzi at the McKay Center with other football players, eating in the program's dining hall, and sleeping in a suite at the LA Memorial Coliseum. The unidentified man is reportedly college age and was discovered at practice wearing number 87. The problem? The homeless man is 5'10", and the player who wears number 87 is 6'4".
That's incredible.
This is incredible.
Yeah, that's amazing. Kudos to that guy. I mean, I feel bad because he's homeless, and I'm sure this is a difficult situation for him. But what a badass. Spending several days in the SC complex and not being noticed once.
Yeah.
I mean, it was several days. So obviously, for several days, no one said anything.
Right. And he was just like, yeah, that guy's here. Look, I've got a lot of questions coming out of this.
Okay.
One, like top of mind.
Right.
When I read that, the thing that stuck out to me the most is the line where they say the problem is that the homeless man is 5'10". The player who wears number 87 is 6'4". Where is the real number 87 at?
Well, okay.
Like, hold on.
All right.
Like, is anybody asking that question? Like, okay, where's the 6'4" version of number 87?
Okay, so here's the explanation I'll give you. And it's by no way right, but here's the one I can come up with.
All right.
There are multiple numbers on college football teams.
Yes.
Many, I mean, I'm not going to say many. There's two. There's 287 sometimes. Uh-huh. Most of the time, it's single-digit numbers.
Right, because you can wear them offensively and defensively, right?
Yeah, usually you don't see a DN wearing 87 or whatever. No. In this case, though, I feel like you would still, as a player, in your mind, know which are the 287s. Or that you'd notice there were 287s and you'd go, hold on a minute. I think there's only 187 on our team, so who's that guy?
Yeah. I mean, you would definitely give the... Whoa.
Hold up.
Like if there is one thing where ineptitude of Clay Helton can be pointed to, it is you had a homeless guy not just in the facility, but involved in practice, and you couldn't pick him out.
Dude, he was an integral part of the team. He's catching punts.
He was.
That's really hard.
He just stood in there and punt return, and nobody was like, who is this guy?
He's pretty good.
Okay. Other question. What was he doing the rest of practice? Like this guy, one, he must be at least some sort of an athlete because like you can't just roll out into a Division I practice and be like, and just blend in unless he's just like in there, like he's with the receivers and they're running routes and he's just like, oh, you can go in front. Oh, you can go in front.
Yeah.
He's just not getting any reps. Is that what we're going with here?
So I will tell you right now, and maybe I am off base on this, but I realistically, when I think back to my time at Oregon State and just being at practices, and especially spring ball, because let me tell you something. You want to talk about a whole group of dudes that would rather be
walk-ons out there too. Yeah.
Well, that would rather be somewhere else and are not exactly like being perceptive. That's spring ball, dude. Yep. Nobody wants to be out there.
That's a good point.
And so I can see if you were a receiver, if you were a corner,
yeah,
maybe not a linebacker.
No, this guy has to be playing receiver because he's wearing number 87.
Yeah.
No. You would stick out too much wearing number 87 and lining up at corner. Like, this guy 100% was playing receiver.
Yeah.
And, but you know this though, even if you don't care,
mm-hmm.
you look like Division I athletes. College athletes look athletic when they're running routes, even when they don't care.
Yeah.
And even when they don't want to be out there.
Yeah. If you don't, you stick out.
Yes. And so I'm going to give this homeless dude credit that he made it a couple of days before they were like, who the hell is this guy?
Oh, that's why I did the applause, dude. That's badass.
It is badass. It is badass.
Text line saying this is the real life Rudy.
This is a better story than the movie Rudy because it's true. So
who plays this guy in a movie?
But then here's the other thing that I have so many questions going through my mind. Like, this should be the time where you absolutely don't get anybody from the outside coming in because we're in COVID times, right?
Yeah, that's true.
And they're saying that they, like, security, somebody in security is getting fired over this because they say to get into the Galen Center, which is where USC Athletics are operated, that it's like their Death Star. It's their HDC.
Yeah.
Or Valley Center. So in order to get in there, you have to not just go through the normal security, but then you have to go through this COVID screening process, which has compliance directors there. So USC security officials are apparently upset about this because they're like, whoa, 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 whoa. Homeless is just like, yep. And apparently they saw him and were like, hey, that's the guy who snuck into the soccer complex. We know this guy. He's done it before. He was caught at the soccer field earlier in the spring. And so he's like, you know what? Screw it. I set the bar too low.
That's right.
I'm going football.
Yeah.
And he got meals. He got housing. He got practice.
Training.
He was in the jacuzzi.
He got training.
Got training.
So you say
SC needs to hire this man.
Well,
are we in agreement?
Oh, yeah.
SC
yeah.
needs to hire
give
this
him a
young
scholarship.
Man.
Just give him a scully. Just do it. Well, come on. Keep him on the team.
I mean, Aunt Becky's kids got in.
Give him a free education. He's obviously a pro in swindling. Also, I would like to point out, you said that somebody in security needs to get fired. Dude, no. The receivers coach needs to get fired. Because if this guy is really wearing 87 and he's with the receivers mm-hmm. group doing individual drills, which that's pretty much like 30% of spring ball mm-hmm. is individual drills and like 7-on-7. So then I'm even thinking too, the offensive coordinator.
Yeah.
Because the offensive coordinator's probably seen this guy and he goes, well, hold on a second. Why isn't he getting reps? Like, that's the craziest part of all this, okay? Here's what I'll tell you from the inside on it. Fall camp.
From the inside on it.
The first week of fall camp is about reps. The next 3 to 4 weeks are about getting the game plan together for week one. Spring ball is reps. It is literally reps, 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 figuring out who's mm-hmm. on the depth chart, and then we have a spring game, and then we wait for another couple months till the game.
Unless
how the
well,
hell
hold on,
did he
unless,
get past this?
See, and that was my question, but here's the thing. The vets all sit out on the sideline. I guarantee you he just blended in with those guys.
Damn.
Right? You know what I'm saying?
Damn.
Like, you know the important players that would get, like, a surgery, or the important guys would just be, like, sitting out.
Sure.
I guarantee he was, like, over with those guys, and then one day he got bored and was like, what the hell? Let's catch a punt. He was watching those schlubs at USC practice. He was like, I can do that. I can drop a punt. All right. I've got more thoughts on this. And look, we need to discuss this because this man has become a hero and there's more and more information coming out.
And the text
minute.
Line is just killing it with questions and
all right.
comments.
We'll answer them. AJ and Dusty on the fan. Okay. Scott Wolf of Inside USC has got more on the imposter. Okay.
You mean the hero?
This dude, what did end up popping him was the punt returns. The punt returns in practice, it was his athletic, and this was my big question. It does turn out, you know, the initial report was that he even returned punts at practice. That's where they said, who is this guy? But he got a helmet. He got pads. I think he had inside help here. I think this is an inside job, and it's gonna be. You want me to go galaxy brain on this? Clay Helton needs a feel good story. This is gonna be his feel good story reclamation project. Pete Carroll had these all the time when he was at SC. This is an old page out of the playbook.
Yeah, I want to say you're wrong, but I also love that you thought of that.
Yeah. So this is what happened. They use fingerprint scanning technology to get into the McKay Center, which is where they, where the football facilities are. Mm. And so apparently they have allowed doors to be propped open for COVID reasons. And so a door was propped open. That's how they think this guy got in initially. And the compliance at the Galen Center, though, where they eat, that is the bigger question mark, is that they're like, well, how did he get past them? Like, we understand he got into the McKay Center, but the food place, you've got to swipe a card and get past some compliance. Neither one of those things happened.
Wow.
This guy, the text line, 503-250-1080. This guy needs to see how many sports he can infiltrate, and should just wear number 87 for each sport and just see how far he can get. That's a good call.
Yeah.
He's already got soccer and football under his belt.
You might get a raised eyebrow with basketball, because I don't know too many 87s.
No. Or 5'10 guys playing basketball. How about we throw that one on?
Then again, he could be just so kind of like unique that people are like, oh, that's the 5'10 guy wearing 87. Mm. Not going to question that.
Belichick needs to hire him as a spy. I agree.
Yeah.
I agree with that. I wholeheartedly agree with that. Well, now we know who the Chargers are going to draft.
Oh, that's really good. I do like this, too. The players knew they were on board, and they were like, F it, let's just have some fun. See, now that was my point. When I heard that he was...
I think 87 is behind this. Yeah, the real 87.
But, like, he got into a hot tub or a whirlpool, whatever, with the guys. And I was telling you this to you in the break. It was like, look, I didn't know every guy on the team, like, well, like, intimately, like, long conversations or anything. Mm-hmm. I knew everybody's name and face, though. So I just feel like if we all got into that tub and I saw one face that I didn't know, I would just have to be like, oh, I'm sorry, what's your name? And then once I started digging deeper, I'd be like, well, this is a homeless guy. What are you doing here?
And then you'd probably be like, oh, well.
You know what? I'm going to let you stay.
Whatever. Have fun. See how long you can do it for, bud. Look, I feel bad for the guy because, look, on one hand, this is what he resorted to. Like, he was like, I ain't got anywhere else to go. Screw it. I don't blame him for riding that one out as long as he can, you know? Just, I mean, don't return punts next time.
No, that's where you got caught. I mean, you could probably pull this same thing.
This dude will be at UCLA in a week.
Yeah, and then drive on up to Cal. Don't do it at Stanford. They'll know.
Yeah, they'll know.
Yeah. Cal, though, I think
you have to solve a Rubik's Cube to get into the facility there.
Yeah. Plus, like, I don't know. He'll probably step it. There'll be some intelligence test to get in there or something.
Like the Rubik's Cube.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Plus, David Shaw is really smart. He'll, like, walk in with that face of his and be like, I don't know you.
Or all of those other programs you just mentioned have their S together enough.
That's true. Yeah. Well, maybe not at UCLA. Chip Kelly might just be like, nah, I don't care.
That's what I'm talking about.
You're not part of the offense. I don't care.
Okay. 503-250-1080. That'd be the fan text line. You can be a part of the show that way. Wow. Alex Pruitt, Sports Illustrated senior writer, will join us at 2:30 to discuss the opt-outs and how they're being evaluated. But coming up next, it's always awkward, often offensive, exceedingly entertaining. It's our weekend, would you rather?